We should probably get Terry a nice bottle of zombie takeout.
Why?
I don't know. Isn't it normal when you go somewhere to show up with a nice bottle of zombie takeout? What's up? Welcome to episode 198 of Zombie
Zombie Takeout,
the B-movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, got a little bit of news. This from IO9's Morning Spoilers column from today about episode 7. Warwick Davis is keen to return to the Star Wars franchise, and he's joking about all the ways he can make it happen. He says, "A cameo would be delightful. I know one of the conceptual artists who draws all the conceptual art for the characters. I keep telling him to draw some characters who are very short, just in the hope that they'll cast me."
And I don't... Warwick Davis needs to be in there more than fucking Mark Hamill needs to be in there. Let's be honest.
Let me just continue this first. He also said, "I might pop my head into Pinewood Studios one day to see if they can put me in a costume and put me in a scene. That might be the way to go." And it just closes with, "Production in London is slated to begin in May. And Disney and Lucasfilms confirmed that Episode 7 will take place 30 years after Return of the Jedi. They've also described the cast as a trio of new young leads, along with some very familiar faces. The cast is supposedly going to be announced soon, so we'll learn just how many of the rumors have been accurate." So it's new young faces along with familiar faces. So I'm hoping the main cast is young.
Well... And
I think the originals will just have supporting roles.
No matter how this is, it will disappoint.
Oh, of course.
I think that was the lesson of the prequels.
Yes, absolutely.
You're better off just holding it out there for people to go, "Man, could you imagine if they did this into a movie?"
But I think I know where you're going. Warwick Davis needs to be in this because it's not a Star Wars movie if Warwick Davis isn't in it.
It's like not having the droids in it. What the fuck?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he was in the prequels, too.
Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me, okay, so it's been 30 years since the originals in the story.
Yeah.
Luke and Leia were 19 in New Hope?
Something like that, yeah.
In their early 50s in this. Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, quite a bit older than that.
Well, oh yeah, you're right. They were older than their characters.
Well, true, in the originals, but they could pass for 19 in New Hope.
But this is...
They're going to be a pretty haggard 50 in the new ones.
This is, you know, it's really 30 years after Return of the Jedi.
Is it?
Well, Jedi was 30 years ago from last year.
Oh, wow, okay.
It's been 31 years.
Don't count.
Right.
So it has been 30 years. Okay. I didn't do the math. Well, maybe they'll pass for it. Because, Han would be about 60, because he was around 30, 35 in the originals.
Yeah.
Harrison Ford's in his 70s, I believe.
Yeah.
So it's a stretch, but yeah. Hopefully they're small enough roles that nobody's going to nitpick, and we'll just be excited to see them. But Warwick definitely needs to be in that movie. It also occurred to me that it's only been about 70 years since the prequels. So it's entirely possible that someone from that era could still be around for the new movies. If anyone survived that era.
Very true. Well,
Well, none of the Jedi did, of course.
No.
Palpatine, Vader didn't. Oh, I just had a horrible thought.
What?
We didn't see him die. And they haven't established Gungan lifespans.
Trust me, there will be no Jar Jar Binks in the movie.
Hopefully not.
Lucas almost wrote him out entirely himself.
He had like one line in the last movie. Two words.
Like, if you combined the amount of screen time he had in 2 and 3, you're probably not going to get 10 minutes.
Yeah, true. Well, he literally had one line in each, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. He had a scene and a line, and that was it.
I recently watched, I think it was last Friday when it went to Netflix, the final season of Clone Wars, the animated series. Overall, pretty good. I think they were ideas from previous seasons that didn't get used, and they just kind of hastily threw together for a sixth season. Because there's no real story throughout them. But there are two Jar Jar episodes.
I will definitely watch these still. I've got like we're almost done with Battlestar Galactica. Then
No.
we have to do House of Cards, and then I think, yeah, I don't know, either the Guild or Orange is the New Black.
Haven't gotten past the first episode of Orange is the New Black. It was a little eh. In my opinion, a lot of people love it. Love the Guild.
And then yeah, Clone Wars in there too, yeah.
With Galactica, you might want to pull out early. The ending is notoriously bad.
Yeah.
It's really not any good after maybe the middle of the third season.
We're almost at that point, actually.
When they,
So we're still into it. It's still good.
when they end up in the prison camp on New Caprica,
Oh, yeah.
you can pretty much write it off there. When they
It's
actually, when they jump forward a few years, and the start of the next season is when it starts to suck, I think. The fourth season.
okay, because I was going to say, it's in season three. We're almost to the middle. We're just at the midpoint of season three, and it's still good so far.
Are they in the prison camp yet?
They were in prison in New Caprica in at the beginning of the third season.
But there hasn't been a time jump.
Ah, a little. Like a
Okay.
year, I think. I think they spent like a year between seasons two and three. I'm not.
Okay, so if three's still good for you, then okay. I thought that's where it really went downhill. It was the prison camp. But if it's
But
still good for you, stick with it.
I have heard it goes downhill, and I'm expecting it. Now, back to Jar Jar, of course. And I don't know if we've discussed this on the show, but I was kind of, in a way, I was a little disappointed that Jar Jar didn't actually have more of a story, or at least an ending to his story
Yeah.
in the trilogy. See, I was kind of hoping to see him kind of grown, you know, towards
Oh,
the
okay.
end,
You
you
wanted to
know?
actually see him, turn into something decent.
Well, right. Well, because then there's the whole question of like, what the fuck have I done here?
Oh,
I
yeah,
put
that would
this
have been really interesting now that you mention it.
like him just having
Yeah.
kind of like a I put this guy in power. You know,
Right.
this is my doing. What the hell?
And was that in two or three where he made that vote?
It was in two that he made the vote, I believe.
So they never even touched on that in the Clone Wars. And they could have because it was set between two and three.
I'm trying to remember. I know. Right, he was in Chancellor, and or he became Chancellor at the end of
Two.
one.
Of one, was it? Okay.
But he was given extra
At the
power
end of two, right.
at the end of two, and you know, Palpatine convinced him easily,
Right.
you know. So it would have been kind of cool to have seen him do something, you know?
Yeah. Or at least have that realization like you're talking about. That would have been brilliant.
Right, a realization at the end, you know? But I think the problem was, well, first, Lucas just wanted to amuse the kids and sell toys. Got called out for it. So rather than actually giving him some weight, he just listened to fan criticism and
And
pulled him out.
disappeared him, yeah.
Yes.
But and that's one thing that and one more point after this, and then we'll get to the actual movie we're supposed to be talking about. It occurred to me while I was watching Clone Wars, the problem with the prequels, well, one of the major problems, yeah, there was a lot of stuff for kids, and you said it was a kids movie.
Yeah.
But then what with the political drama?
What
It
about?
was this serious political drama, and then a bunch of stuff for kids.
Well, the first one, the episode one was a lot more for kids, and then the second one was more of the political
Yeah.
aspects of it.
Good point, yeah.
I mean, the first one had, you know, the just the
Trade Federation and all that.
yeah. Which was just kind of a background point, but there was that bit of espionage between the two, you know, who's, you know, clamping down on what.
And as I was saying, there was this Jar Jar storyline in the last season of Clone Wars. And it occurred to me watching it, he is the exact African American stereotype from the 20s and 30s.
Well, yeah, that was the main criticism.
It never occurred to me, right? At least I didn't realize it to the fullest extent until watching this.
That he was, I believe they called it Step and Fetch It.
Yeah, I wasn't sure, but yeah.
Yeah, and he was exactly that character. And true, Lucas was very influenced by movies of that time, so this was
Apparently.
his you know, not so subtle way of bringing that back and trying to get away with it.
Apparently, if you make him an alien, you can get away with it.
Well, right. I think that was the plan.
And to anyone who will be watching the Clone Wars, the latest season or the series as a whole, as you will be, if it's a Jar Jar episode, I'm pretty sure you can skip it. Every season has at least like one Jar Jar centric episode, and I'm 99.9% sure they're all standalone. So you can skip them and not miss anything. Most of the
Yeah.
episodes are part of like three or four episode arcs, but the Jar Jar stuff, aside from the last season where it's two episodes, they're all standalones. So if he's featured, if you see his name in the description, skip it.
All right.
Because it is just more of the same. And finally, on to this week's movie, which is from 2013, Sun Don't Shine. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by The Road to Nowhere. Come on inside.
And also brought to you by Bleach. It does a body good. All right, so we very abruptly begin with a bit of a
Actually, that's
scuffle.
the exactly what it says in my notes. Very abruptly.
It's probably one of the most jarring openings to a film that I can remember seeing. Because I'm like looking to see if I need to scan back if I missed something. That, oh, it started late. No, that's it. They're in a bit of a scuffle. She accuses him of strangling her. It's a boyfriend and girlfriend, and you can't really see if he did strangle her or not.
She claims that there are marks, they don't show up on the camera.
Right. So there's this whole dance that they do throughout the whole entire story of her accusing him of violence. And then him accusing her of violence. But they. So here's the deal. They are traveling together. I'm not sure why they're traveling, where they're traveling together, or what the
You
point of
don't
this
know at
is.
that point, no. You
It
find
turns
out
out
not too long after.
they have a body in their trunk. So they're looking to dispose of it. Because why they're just driving around with the fucking body in their trunk for as long as they're driving around with the body in their trunk is beyond me. Well, actually, I do know. They're not the brightest people in the world. They're not supposed to be smart people either. They are just average kids who.
Accidentally ended up with a body in their trunk. Not accidentally, but
Well,
like
yeah, I was gonna say.
not what's the word I'm looking for? Suddenly, with unpla without planning it, ended up with a body in their trunk.
One of the main question is, one of the two of them, or maybe even both of them, has a serious problem.
Well, I think they both do, but
But we're not sure which one. Well,
she's
no.
her problem ended up resulted in the body in the trunk.
Well, one of them has a really serious problem that brought that body in the trunk. I'm not so sure which one, honestly.
Well, yeah, true. When they get into the real relationship, it's a tough call, yeah.
But anyway, they're driving with the body in the trunk. They have, several Edgar Allan Poe moments of, they meet up with someone, they're just hanging out with them, like, when the fuck are they gonna go away? Because we've got a body and we gotta do this. When they're broken down on the side of the road, when they go to a hotel, they stay at a lady friend of his house.
Well, they don't really stay there. They're there very briefly, actually.
Well, yeah, he was supposed to have stayed there. She was supposed to have stayed out in a tent nearby, which I'm
Is that
not
why they went there?
sure.
So he could have a place to crash? That was the only reason? Because I honestly forgot.
Yeah, I think it was a place to crash, get some more clothes, some food, and move along. Because she wants to, stay in a hotel and,
He
go
doesn't want
to
to leave any tracks.
an amusement park and just all this crazy shit
With
while
the body in the
he's
trunk.
with the fucking body in the trunk. They finally get around to going to disposing of the body while she is at the amusement park. And Why he thought he could do it on his own, I'm not sure either. Oh, wait a minute, I've already covered that.
Yeah, he's got a bit of a problem.
While he's rooting around in the trunk, the person who owns the boat rental place kind of walked up behind him and saw what was in the trunk.
Or at least was close enough. He wasn't like right behind him, but he was close enough to probably see a hand.
To see something, smell something, because I mean they poured bleach all over it, but that can only do so
And
much.
a thin plastic tarp, yeah.
Yes. And when the guy says to just get out of there, he doesn't. And well, he winds up killing that man too. Well, he may have not killed the body in the trunk, but he
Oh,
killed
but I
this
don't
guy at
think he
least.
did. I think it's flat out said that she did.
Yeah, but he also tells her that she killed him.
Is
I
she?
was with you at that point too, that she killed the person in the trunk until he goes over and says, "Look what you did."
Because her killing the one guy put them in the position where he had to kill the guy who owned the boat shop.
Well, think about that though. It sounds like something he would do the first time around.
True, true.
Like, you did this.
Yeah.
I didn't do this. You did this. That. So, it's
Okay,
very questionable.
perhaps, yeah.
When that scene happened, I was just kind of like, holy shit.
Yeah, I didn't think about it that way, but yeah, it's a good point.
Because he's pretty much holding her head over the body like a dog that just took a shit
Exactly.
in the kitchen, only he's the one that took the shit. And so, like, wait a minute. What else has he blamed on her? She's not the sharpest tool in the shed, of course. But maybe she's not a killer.
That's possible.
Where now we know he is.
Yeah.
But anyway, they go to dispose of the body, and hilarity ensues very briefly because I've almost done the entire film,
And
actually.
there's a little bit of an odd twist at the end.
Well, the real odd twist at the end was, I don't know if it was on your copy, but on
The
mine,
5 minutes at the end?
5 minutes of black screen at the
I was
end.
discussing that with a friend before we started recording tonight.
Thank God, because what the hell was
Well,
that?
no, neither of us know, but the suggestion was that it was put there to give the audience a chance to think about what they just saw.
That's not a bad idea.
That, or it's some kind of bizarre bug because literally 5 minutes of black screen. I sat for the entire thing thinking there was some kind of hidden scene that I'd forgotten about.
I mean, it was getting late and I was ready to crash,
I
but.
sat there with the black screen running for 5 minutes, watched the whole thing. There was nothing else.
So I scanned forward to see if there was anything there, and I'm like, oh no, there's nothing there, not an extra scene or anything like that.
Now, this one was written and directed by Amy Simetz, who played Chris in Upstream Color. And one of the executive producers, as well as doing the credits, was Shane Carruth. Now, Shane has his fingerprints all over this thing.
I was not expecting to see that much of an influence of his on this, or at least of the same mindset. Who knows if he influenced her or not, or it's just.
The original festival release for Sun Don't Shine was March 10th, 2012, almost a year before Upstream Color, which was January 21st, 2013.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing she had just finished this when she started work on Upstream.
Yeah, who knows how long they take to make these, actually.
Or she was working on this concurrently.
Yeah.
Because, Shane had some involvement with it. But I don't know if it was, him, giving her ideas or just playing sounding board. Maybe she saw Primer and he was just a huge influence on her directing.
Yeah, the style of storytelling is very similar, and I love it.
As well as the dialogue and the kind of very naturalistic look. Like Primer, it's got kind of a voyeuristic feel. The camera's just kind of there.
I think she takes the dialogue to even
Even further, yes.
more of an extreme
Yeah.
because she's not doing a naturalistic dialogue. She's even throwing in voiceovers and other
Oh, yeah.
conversations on top of what's going on.
True, true. She layers a lot. But I mean, it's not line counter line.
All
They
right.
blend. They bleed over top of each other,
Yeah.
as they do in Shane's movies.
I mean, there is a distinct difference between the
Oh,
two.
absolutely.
Shane Carruth is more of just, natural, this is how people are going to talk, and that's it. Whereas, well, maybe
And this is her only film, as far as I know. So,
this is her only feature length.
yeah. So we don't know if
Everything
that's her
else,
style or if it was just for this film.
she did was a short.
Also, there was a review on IMDb that I think really sums up the movie well. Quote, "It reminds me of overhearing a conversation between strangers passing you on the street. You miss the setup of what's going on, but you happen to catch the peak of the story where things go terribly wrong for people you'll never know. You hear just enough of certain details that it sets your mind wondering what the before and after could have been, eventually finding yourself mapping out your own scenarios. It doesn't matter if they're good or bad, that brief moment sticks with you long afterward."
It is like a layering of what the fuck on top of what the fuck on top of what the fuck. It's
Yeah.
just when you think you've figured it out, this other little curve comes in, and you're like, wait a minute, what did you just say?
And it's two actors for the vast majority of the movie.
There are more producers on this film than there are actors.
Well, not exactly. There were four executive producers. There are actually six cast members. They count the guy who played the corpse.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. Do they count him in the
I
cast?
see
Apparently
that.
there was a we only see a hand, but apparently, well, no, we did see the body in the dream.
I see seven producers.
Oh, okay. Executive producers, it
Four
was Shane.
executives, a co-producer, and two producers. Seven producers,
Okay,
six
so it
cast
does have to be the
members.
cat that number of the cast. I was thinking of the executive producers with the list that Shane is in. That's only four. But that scene where that dream sequence where they're squeezing the blood out of the body,
That was a
one of the most
whole sort of
disturbing
level
things
of what
I've
the
ever seen.
fuck.
Yeah. And you mentioned the roadside scene
Yes.
with the guy they call the roadside angel. If you know what's going on, this is the second time I've seen it, by the way. If you know what's going on, that scene is incredibly funny.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's just looking at the guy like, what's he doing here? When is he gonna go? It reminded me of an old Animaniacs episode with this character. I think it was Pip, guy who just kept talking. Yakko like actually made motions of like chewing his leg off to get away from him. Very much reminded me of that.
I thought he was a cop at first because I thought I saw like a holster on the side, but yeah, he just hangs out and then leaves.
And they don't have to pull a gun. And I thought I remembered the gun getting pulled at that point. The gun is never used. They broke Chekhov.
Yes, they did.
And the thing about this movie,
The gun was used, I thought, indirectly. Didn't he shoot the
well, yeah, we don't see it used. Fair enough.
you don't see it shoot, but he goes into the glove
He does get
compartment,
it. Yeah,
yeah, and
you can
gets it, and
assume
then
he shot
ties.
the guy running the boat rental place. True.
But yeah, just to take a fuck you to Chekhov, father of modern drama, they don't actually discharge it on screen.
And I think the thing that makes this such a what the fuck over what the fuck, as you put it, the pacing is glacial.
Yes.
And it's about a body in a trunk that is in the trunk for 99% of the movie. The last
Right.
scene, it leaves the trunk. It's in the trunk for most of the movie, and yet it's this glacial pacing and sort of this mundane slice of life with the body in the trunk.
It's a mundane slice. Well, I wouldn't say mundane. It's a slice of life.
Disregard the body in the trunk, and it is fairly mundane.
It's a clusterfuck, though.
That's true.
It's showing the clusterfuck well in progress, though. Most of the action has taken place already,
Yeah.
but there's still a few things left for them to do.
And that pacing, once you know the body is in the trunk, it gets really perverse.
Well,
Because
you know what?
they're having this couple's argument at a bar, and she's just kind of following him around, doing the clingy girlfriend thing, and there's a body in her trunk.
And I thought they had dumped the body in the trunk. I was kind of like, wait, what do you mean that she heard scratching? It wasn't until the whole I heard scratching thing
That
that
was
I
the Lady Gaga
realized
moment.
that the body was still in the trunk. I thought when they went to the roadside and they were at the body of water that they were dumping the body. I thought they were pouring the bleach on the empty trunk to clear the trunk out from any residual
They were putting
smell.
it on the body.
They were pouring it on the body to just decompose it more.
It doesn't leave the trunk until you did this.
Well, right. So, I'm thinking, okay, they dispose of the body. Now, where's this movie gonna go? And then they're like, I heard scratching, and she's like, you heard scratch? Wait, what?
And I just gotta give a shout out to the two leads, Katie Glenn Scheel and Ken Tucker Audley. Brilliant performances.
Yeah, there's everything subtle. There's nothing
Oh yeah.
telegraphed.
And they're perfectly natural, but Crystal just gets creepier and creepier as the movie progresses.
Holy shit, yes.
And Leo's just trying to keep everything together.
Right,
And
and
just
then
trying to do the but as he sees it, the right thing for the woman he loves.
and that's how I saw it until towards the end where he's telling her that she did that
Well,
she did the
yeah, but
murder. And then I'm just like, wait, what the fuck?
and she explains the murder as her boyfriend was abusive and she had a moment where she lost it and killed him. And then Leo gets abusive. And that's when she really starts to turn. Because, the scratching is really the Lady Macbeth moment. That's when she starts to really go insane. But when he hits her, that's when she gets real dark.
I don't know, because there are points where you think that's where, when he's abusive to her, and you think it, okay, that's going to be the deal breaker there. Finally, they're going to part ways or something. But then no, she just set, hits on him some more,
Well, that's kind of normal for that type, the needy type. I've had my experiences. You can do whatever, and they will come back.
Right. So she liked going in that direction. That's where she wanted to be with him.
Yeah, it's scary.
So yeah, I can't wait to watch this again, honestly, because I want to figure out what the fuck happened to her.
This movie also features the least erotic sex scene I have ever seen.
Oh, well, it's very brief.
Well, it's brief, and there's no nudity. It's all shot in the face and, torsos. But just the oh, I don't even know what to call it. Just the sort of businesslike nature of it.
It's very clinical.
Yeah.
It's almost like the scene from Meaning of Life, I think.
Yes, very much so. Now, how much about the ending do we want to talk about?
It's almost like we could give it because I mean, like I saw it and I'm still not entirely sure what
This is true.
happened.
I've seen this movie twice and I'm not exactly sure how to interpret it. So they're disposing of the body, and Leo's getting, progressively more abusive, verbally abusive towards Crystal. She hits him with an oar, knocks him out, and runs. Police are drawing near. Leo gives himself up because there's no way he's getting out. She finds herself at this house, walks into the pool, fully clothed, and then something very strange happens because I was completely with it up until that very, very ending, the last two lines. It made
All right.
sense.
All right.
And someone, you hear a woman's voice say, "Should I call the police?" And Crystal says, "No, not yet." Who was she?
I interpret it as the owner of the house.
But, okay, if someone breaks into your house and is hanging out in your pool, are you going to say, "Should I call the police?" that calmly?
Well, because she's not doing anything.
True, true. Okay. I took it as almost a conspiracy.
Because I kind of, you're gonna get out of here, or should I call the police, kind of thing.
To me, it always read as this whole thing was planned, and this was her co-conspirator saying, "Should I call the police?" Not yet.
But the police were already there.
I prefer your interpretation, but
The police were already on top of
yeah,
this.
he had already turned himself in.
Right. So there's no need to call the police for that.
But then she said, "Not yet." What did that mean?
And two, well, she wanted to swim longer.
Okay. You went with a very mundane explanation, and I think that I think probably fits the movie better, and that I
Oh,
personally prefer.
that's totally her.
Yeah.
She, because she talked about earlier in the movie about always wanting a swimming pool and stuff, or her friends never had a swimming pool and she wanted to get into fucking swimming pool. It was just one of those things she threw out there. And I viewed that as
Good point,
one
yeah.
last thing before she goes to prison.
Yeah, Okay, I like that. All right. We'll go with that.
And so, yes, very just creepily. Just no, not yet. I want to swim around a little more.
Now, on the downside, I will say it does drag a bit in spots. It
It's
gets a little
only an
boring
hour
here and
10
there,
or hour 20.
particularly when they're at the bar and it's all the, relationship stuff that is so out of place when there's a body in the trunk. It feels like it drags, but then you remember there's a body
There's
in
a
a
body in
trunk.
the trunk.
And it just, as I said earlier, it just gets very perverse. So I don't know if it drags or it doesn't.
I mean, this is an Edgar Allan Poe story with the relationship weaved throughout it.
This is unlike any movie I've ever seen.
It's an Edgar, it's imagine the Telltale Heart, but with a young adult romance going on in the middle of it.
Yeah, kinda.
So it's insane.
Yeah, completely.
And the mystery, of course, is who is the crazier of the two?
Right. And by your version, they both went to jail.
I think so, yeah.
And we can assume that since the bodies were floating in the swamp, they were probably found.
Yeah. Oh,
Because the police were right there, so they were definitely found.
well, one of my proposed titles for Why Rednecks Can't Be in the Mob, because there's a hilarious scene where they're trying to dispose of the bodies and doing the worst job ever.
They don't weigh them down.
Yes.
I just know from watching a few mob movies in my time, you gotta weigh the body down.
Right.
Or maybe invest in some thermite if you have half a brain. But yeah, so they're floating, and yeah, so they're the bodies are found. He's arrested. Does he sell her out?
I don't know.
I'm trying to, go with some headcanon here. Let's just go to sequels and remakes. No sequels, obviously, yet. A remake too soon. A sequel could be interesting, though.
A sequel would be fucking interesting as hell, of course.
Because that gets into the courtroom side and the legal side, and does he sell her out? If we can assume that they've both been arrested.
Even after, like, they get out of jail years later or something. I mean, this disaster of a couple.
Yeah.
Just years later, then with a kid.
And like that comment from IMDb said, you find yourself wondering what the before and after could have been.
Of course.
And mapping out your own scenarios, as we're doing right now.
We could go on for another hour, I think, just talking about what the fuck these two have done and what they're going to do. They're despicable, crazy people that are not likable, but yet the movie is just captivating. There's no other way to describe it.
I reserve this term, but I'm gonna say masterpiece.
Ooh.
Not in the sense of it's not the perfect movie. Well, let's just go on to Brains.
Okay.
And I'll fully form my thought. It's not a perfect movie, but it is unlike anything I've seen, and it leaves a mark. And I'm gonna say masterpiece in the sense that I think it needs to be seen. I'm going five.
I don't know if I'm quite at the masterpiece level, because in fact, I don't know, my number might go up or down upon repeated viewings.
Right.
But yeah, it's the exact opposite of what we saw last week.
Yes, very much so.
I mean, it's ridiculous how polar opposite they are.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going with
Actually, it's the exact
four.
opposite of what we've seen for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm going with the four though, just for now though, because
Okay.
that,
Playing
like I
it all
said,
safe.
it could go up or down, depending on how many clues I pick up upon second repeat viewings, but I definitely recommend seeing it too. It's especially if you liked, Shane Carruth's movies, which I mean, so in a way we have seen this before, like that style at
Yes,
least.
yes. But
That
it's the deliberately slow as molasses pacing of a murder mystery, or of a murder story that I've never seen before.
It is a different way of doing the whodunit by following the murderers around,
Yeah.
but you still don't know who did it.
Effectively, yeah.
And they never tell you who did it. in a way. I mean, they kind of tell you, but you're not sure if that is actually the truth anymore.
See, I thought I knew. I was convinced that she did it and he just helped her. But from what you've said, it does put some doubt on that.
Yeah, because if you believe him,
Yeah.
she also killed the guy with the boats.
Right.
I mean, right from that opening though, it tells you to sit the fuck down, shut the fuck up, and watch this, or you're gonna miss something, and we're not gonna spoon feed you or go
No.
back and spell it out for you.
And that's, I think, the biggest Shane influence in the movie. It does not hand you anything.
It's more filmmakers just need to just take that. I'm telling this story, figure it out for yourself,
Right.
asshole.
All right, so what have we learned?
I learned that Skywalker sound really is everywhere. Holy shit.
And I learned that a thin plastic tarp is all it takes to keep the smell of a rotting corpse from escaping from a car trunk in the Florida heat.
I thought they dumped the body earlier. 'Cause it's like somebody would have smelled that, like at the hotel parking lot or
The
whatever.
roadside angel was standing next to the car on a hot day in Florida.
We
He
don't even
should have
know
smelled something.
how long has that body been in the trunk.
That's true, we have no idea.
They never establish how long they've been on the road when the movie begins.
We see a hand, it has skin, but that's all we see.
Right.
Because the other time we see it, it's in a dream sequence.
Yeah.
All right, so until next week when we'll be reviewing Beaches.
Wait, what?
That's what it says. Go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, and now YouTube. We have a YouTube page. Thanks to Lil Puddles for helping me with the banner. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. The request form, if you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form, we'll get to it. And the recommendations list, this was a no-brainer.
Yeah.
It's Amy Simons, it's Shane Carruth's fingerprints all over it, it had to be on the rec list. You can also email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZT01, or for the alphanumerically challenged, 414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next week, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There
are.
you are.
You can tell me I'm not gonna get mad at you.
We should probably get Terry a nice bottle of zombie takeout. Why? I don't know.
Okay. All right.